Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. Our goal is to reframe, simplify, and focus on our mission to make disciples in a post-Christian culture. We discuss reaching new people and raising up leaders while removing the barriers of churchianity. I'm Eric Bryant, one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, author of Not Like Me, and resource provider at ericbryant.org. In this episode, I'm excited to interview my good friend, Rob Overholt, a former church planter, a colleague at Gateway Church, and a fantastic writer at roboverholt.com. Rob, it is great to see you. Thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dr. Eric, good friend. good to see you via this amazing technology.
I know, it's fun. We had our own run of a few seasons of a podcast, and now with this one, I wanted you to be one of my first guests, just because you've shaped so much of how I see ministry and do ministry. And I wanted to start there really over the last 5 years, maybe even go 10 years, because you were a consultant for churches and church plants before you came and helped us and really were a big part, you and Shala, a big part of helping the momentum we've seen at Gateway in South Austin and even at Gateway in general. So what are you seeing in terms of the church? Where is it thriving in a post-Christian culture?
Well, that's a great question, first of all. But I think it's, as always, it thrives in relationship and in development of people, you know, and being for people, not against them. You know, I think that's where the church always thrives. When the church anchors itself against things, it doesn't look nearly as effective as when it is for things. And so, you know, and I think for relationship and, you know, for the purpose of relationship. And so I'm really grateful. And I think over, you know, we've gotten to see quite a shift in our lifetime. We've been remarkably fortunate to see an amazing shift where the church literally kind of came forward about a century or two, you know, in terms of, you know, in the late 90s, you know, when I was a brand new believer, I became a believer in 97. And about 98, a really transformation, churches like Gateway were popping up that were suddenly bringing music into the modern era, you know, and they were allowing you to kind of come as you are, as you know, Gateway would say, and express, and just wear jeans or flip-flops or whatever. And that just felt revolutionary, you know, and it felt freeing. But the interesting thing is, over the past 20 years since then, you know, that's no longer odd. You know what I mean? Like most churches do that now. You know, most mainline churches allow for that. And so the thing that made those churches so appealing, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, has already sort of faded, you know, but it always comes back to that core of relationship. And I think that was a relational statement at the time. Mm-hmm. It was, we're not alienating you. We are in this with you. And so I think the church has to always be thinking about, what are we doing to bridge the gap of relationship? You know, because the cultural divide and the myth and what the enemy does in our culture is tell people that there is this great chasm between sacred and secular things. And I think that's what's always intriguing me about Jesus, is that his lines, you know, and those who followed him intimately, Paul, Marcel, you know, I mean, I know it was you, but for any listeners, it's like, I think that the lines of sacred and secular were so much blurrier than religious people like to think they are, you know? And I think that's what Jesus combated a lot in religious zealots of his day. And I think it's still something we're up against. Religion wants to make us draw these hard lines. And I think Jesus says the lines are not nearly as strict as you think, and blur them some, and be with people instead of, you know, and before them, not just against them. And I think that's the strength of the church, always at its best. And I think even in these days that we're living in right now, strange as they are, and they are very strange, the strangest thing that I've seen in my 50 years on this planet, for sure. But I think there's opportunity. It affords us some new opportunities. And I think, like all things, and you have to be careful with your theology always in these things. Like, I don't think God caused COVID-19. I don't. I think God allows the products of a broken world to, you know, to kind of bring forth what it brings forth. But then he always uses it for kingdom good. And I think he's going to do the same with all of this.
Yeah. Well, and to me, kind of going back to the idea of sacred versus secular and kind of not giving into those distinctions. You know, I think back to your ministry in Virginia when I first met you, and then even what you did in Las Vegas, and, you know, just the way you were able to reach out to artists, reach out to, you know, it was really almost like a nonprofit in Vegas. What were some of the things that you did? I mean, back when we met in our Mosaic Alliance days, what were some of the things you did to bridge those, that chasm, to have those relationships with people that aren't normally connected to people that go to church?
Yeah. Well, I mean, back to Virginia, we were in Norfolk, Virginia, and we were in a particular area that was just high artists and high, kind of like a microcosm of like a Soho in New York. If anyone's familiar with New York, it would be very much a microcosm of that. But, and we just, you know, again, we set up almost similarly, just a kind of a nonprofit atmosphere of being outside of the walls of the church. Mm-hmm. And just, we began to do jurored art shows, and we began to do mm-hmm. things, and we kind of set themes for them, and they were beautiful themes. We would do one every Good Friday called Renewal. We would mm-hmm. do one in fall called Wonder, and just to get artist takes on these positive messages. And then we would hang these art pieces all throughout our warehouse that we were housed in. And we allowed people to come in and just view those for up to 30 days. And we would often host mm-hmm. panels where people could talk openly, and I might sit on the panel from a spiritual perspective. And we had really open dialogues, and it was, you know, it's difficult to walk those lines a lot of times, but it was beautiful and it was right. And we certainly took our share of some criticism, but we just saw some amazing things. I remember we would share our space with these artists. And I remember at one point, this collective that was in Norfolk that did, they taught writing, they did painting, they did all kinds of different things. They were just an art collective there in the city. And that we were talking to them about, just through the art show, we built a relationship, and we allowed them to have access to our space. And they asked us how much we would charge them for rent. And I remember that we, you know, our position was, we're not going to charge you anything. This is a community space. What's ours is yours. Just trying to kind of, again, for that relationship. And I remember their response was, they said, well, we've got to give you something. So could we give you, like, what is it? The TIV? And I, you know, I was like, oh, like a tithe, you know, and they were like, yeah, tithe. And I was like, well, that means that, yeah, your first 10%. And they said, well, we'd like to give you 10% of everything that we earn. We'd like to give it to you guys as a result. And, I remember saying, well, you just became more obedient than most Christians I know. So, and they weren't even believers at the time. And many of them came to be so through those relationships. But it was just, again, you know, being for them. And same thing in Vegas, just really going there. We set up a nonprofit. We did community needs assessments. We had a group of people that just moved to Las Vegas to plant a church with really a seek first the kingdom and all these things will be added. And it was beautiful. That was a beautiful season, because literally a lot of people went to Vegas without jobs and said, we're going to seek the advancement of God's kingdom and then figure out how we survive. And God provided in just some beautiful ways. Mm. And we had to house people for seasons, and it was very beautiful. And we just went around the city and we interviewed people and just asked them the best things about Vegas and things that Vegas was struggling with, and how a group of altruistic people could come in and lend hand. And we, you know, the nonprofit world, I'm sure in your ministry experience with both Mosaic and Gateway, you know, well, Eric, you know, it's pretty pitted, you know, against, because people are competing for grants and that sort of thing. And so I think what the church has an awesome opportunity to do is come in and say, hey, we're not trying to steal your grant money. We're not trying to compete with you on any level. We just want to help you. We want to serve the people that serve, and we want to, and we found that was an effective and beautiful strategy in Vegas to people that normally thought, you know, I remember we worked with a group in Vegas who were trying to do great work on behalf of people with AIDS. And, they were shocked that a church came alongside, and that's kind of sad that they were shocked, but they were, yeah. They were shocked that a church was helping, because there was a lot of homosexuality in the midst of the nonprofit. And our position was, look, your issue is close to the heart of God. And if it's close to the heart of God, it's got to be close to our heart. And we're not, you know, here to pick fights. We're here to help you, help people. And that just, we just saw, walls that really had existed on both sides just crumble a bit. So it was beautiful.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. Well, in this crazy season, on quarantine and in a world now that's facing a pandemic, you know, you and I had a great conversation last week on the phone. I was on the phone because I didn't want to be on Zoom anymore. But tell some of the ideas, share some of the ideas that you were sharing with me about how the church can emerge stronger through this than it has been.
Well, again, it's interesting because, with all the things going on with my health, I now call myself a cultural commentator. And you can't really be a commentator without being a critic, and so it's one of the things that I live by and I've taught my kids is this world needs more critical thinking, but it doesn't need more thinking that's critical. And to understand the difference, it's not thinking just to be critical. It's not just to pick at things, but it is to say, hey, can we test this? Can we look at this and evaluate it and say, is it effective? And I do think, back to what we were just talking about a few moments ago, in the last 20 or so years, it's not, the church isn't going to survive and just saying, hey, you can come in casual, footwear and dress and there's a place for you. The divides have grown further in terms of, what will draw people to the church and to Jesus. And so I think, COVID really gives us a great chance to catch up a little bit to some of the things where culture's been moving ahead, both in technology. I mean, just the fact that most churches weren't even, many were, but a lot were not even streaming any kind of thing into their communities. And now they've been forced to scramble and to set up technology and think differently about how they're going to present the message of the gospel to a world via technology, I think is a good thing. The church needs, because that's certainly going to be the future. I think both culturally and for the church coming out of this pandemic, it will be interesting because I think, the thing we don't know yet, everyone's, future thinking is cloudy here, but how will this affect relationships? I think people are craving relationships more than ever. I don't know that we're all going to know how to behave when we come out of this. We're going to be like, shall we shake? Should we? I don't know. It'll be weird, but the desire, the craving, I mean, I'm already hearing that everywhere. Even when we meet with like my life group and stuff, they're talking about their neighbors and how people are going outside and standing from distance, but just wanting to have a conversation with humans and I think that's a huge opportunity for the church to be effective again in a relational capacity before them and not against. And I also think just to serve our communities, I think it's also, we've seen, certainly Gateway, and I think Gateway's responded amazingly to the idea of like, there's people that are hurting. We see domestic abuses on the rise and connecting people to resources that the church often has or has access to that people aren't aware of. And I think that's critical. And that's what we need to be about. It's always easy for the church to become insular in its thinking and myopic, and it's a great battle, And I think COVID has forced all of us, it's leveled the playing field, and it's forcing us to think outwardly again for the sake of our survival. And as necessity is the mother of invention, and I think anything that pushes us out again into the community makes my apostolic gene come alive, this is where the church thrives, in the reach and being for people. And so I'm excited about the possibilities actually. And if there's a lot of talk right now about, the plagues and the, wars, and all that, is this the end? And I don't know, you and I have talked about it. We joke, we're one day closer than we were yesterday. Right.
No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. And every generation has thought that it's going to happen in their lifetime. And one day one of them will be right. But if that is true, then we've got to get more equipped to help people and serve people, And so I think, and to learn and to endure this together, we're all in this one together. And so there is no thinking that we have higher ground in any way. We're in it together, and how do we serve humanity? I think can be a beautiful opportunity for the church, and I'm excited to see what comes.
Yeah. Well, I love your optimism and also the challenge, you know, to let's get rid of some things that weren't helping us reach the world that we're called to reach. And, you know, you did such a great job as part of our team. You were executive pastor. You were helping us really in the time you were executive pastor. We went from 3 campuses to 3 more on its way. And you also were a part of leadership development program where you were raising up leaders. I mean, really helping some of our folks grow so much that now they're on staff with us, you know, and leading with us. And then March of 2019, you mentioned earlier health struggles. You've been very open online about what you're going through. But talk about 2019 and what you've learned and even how your ministry has taken a new turn.
Yeah, it's March of 2019, just a drastic turn, just sitting in a meeting and felt like someone flipped my world on its head. Had a really bizarre experience with, you know, stranger things happening in my mind than would happen in a Duffer Brothers meeting, you know, for all you Stranger Things fans. Bizarre things I'd not experienced before. I assumed, you know, in my, you know, whatever, you know, my, I've not really historically gotten sick a lot or whatever. And I just normally push through some of that stuff. And so I just kind of went home doggedly thinking it's probably some kind of infection, like an ear infection or some kind of strange virus. And so, talked to a doctor on a teledoc the next morning and really embarrassed to say that when he balked at helping me on the phone and said, "Hey, I think you need to go in for a neurological examination," me with none of my medical training got belligerent and said, "Well, that seems like an overreaction." And and so let me say what they're saying to all medical professionals out there, thank you for all you're doing. You are wise beyond all of us. And so thanks for all your hard work on the front lines.
For sure.
But, and I've just learned to appreciate the health profession over this past year because it did turn out to be something more formidable. The first of the diagnoses that came in for me was multiple sclerosis. And then that didn't even seem to have a solve on everything I was enduring. So visited Mayo Clinic up in Rochester, Minnesota over New Year's, as you know, and found out that just comorbidities of a couple of other really tricky neurological conditions. People that know me well probably like, this is not surprising to us, Rob, that you have neurological issues. But they've made my life pretty inconvenient and really slowed me down a lot. I went from somebody who could function on 5-6 hours sleep a night easy and just push and push and go very type A to suddenly now 12 hours sleep is not uncommon, sometimes 14, 16, just because, you know, and that's very inconvenient. But I'm learning some beautiful things, you know, in a culture obsessed with production. I'm learning that being slowed down isn't the worst thing. And I'm learning a lot about grief and about loss. And, you know, and that really even ties in to kind of what we're talking about with the church. I think I hope for the church, what I've realized through this experience is I've lost, you know, the capacity to work at the same level, you know, and I've lost the capacity to do a lot of the things that I could do. I walk with a cane now and I have certain struggles and even memory and things of that nature. But I think, you know, it's challenged me on a whole new level to think about grief and about lamenting and loss and all the things that our culture is just terrible at. And I would love to say, here's where it'd be beautiful to say there is a great line between secular culture and sacred culture, but there's not there either. You know, there's really not. In fact, this might sound harsh, but I not only think that our culture is terrible at grief and the expression of it, I think the church is somewhat culpable. Because we've not dealt well with setbacks. We don't live in a culture that does that. You know, like I know you and I've talked about, I love the great city we live in, that we share in Austin, Texas, but you know, my muse is always to, you know, say, you know, Western culture thinks it's superior to the East. The United States thinks it's the best thing in all the West. Texas thinks it's the best thing in the United States and Austin thinks it's the best thing in Texas. that's a lot of layers of intrinsic pride, you know, that you're kind of taught, you know, like, you know, we're, you know, and I think in our culture in America, we have to be honest and say, we're not great at this. We don't lose, you know, we don't accept loss. We don't even understand it. We don't, you know, we still say of the Vietnam War, well, it was a conflict and, you know, we just lost interest and got out. We refused to admit that we kind of got our rear ends handed to us there, you know, like we, maybe, you know, and we don't lose, you know, and so the answer now is, you know, well, participation trophies, because we don't know how to deal with loss. So no one wins, no one loses, which doesn't really solve the equation either. We're not really understanding that we live in a broken state, and you're going to have grievances, you're going to have grief, and you're going to have times where things just don't go your way. And how do you express that in a healthy way? And I think our lack of ability to do that has been crushing culturally. And I think it's why we see so much fear and anger in our culture. I think it's why we see, you know, a lot of pinned up emotion and sort of, you know, animosity stored becomes vitriol spewed, you know? And so, I just would love, you know, in the scriptures we're told in Ecclesiastes, a sad face is good for the heart. And in that same passage is better to be a house of mourning than a house of rejoicing. And you have to at least wonder, like, well, what does that mean? You know, and then Jesus starts one of the most famous discourses of all time with two captivating lines: blessed are the poor in spirit and blessed are those who mourn. And you got to think, well, I need to look into that more. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times the churches, we do the woe is me. It's always a storm. You know, every worship song is about a storm, you know, like, right, that God is running to rescue us from. Or it's just happy, happy. But there's a middle, you know, there's a middle ground of like, of walking and saying, hey, we need to come together and learn how to lament. We need to, which is to express the grief in a healthy way so that we don't carry it dysfunctionally. And so I've been doing a lot of writing on that, just on what I've journeyed. You know, our culture is funny, and as I've endured some loss, you know, a person going through loss becomes heavy to be around sometimes because they're going through something heavy, and I understand that. But, you know, even as I would come into church circles sometimes, I began to notice that a lot of people's faith, someone's heaviness is a challenge to a lot of people's faith, and I think it's a healthy one. But I noticed a lot of Christians would try to just platitude me into like, God's in control. And I believe, I'm a believer, and none of this has shaken my belief in God and God's goodness, but I'm going through something very substantial and real, and I can't pretend that I'm not. I don't think it would be good for my future of my family or anybody. But that kind of threatens people in a strange way. And I think we have to be careful not to alienate that sometimes and just to learn how to, and it's a tough gig. You know, we've talked about this, being a pastor, being in ministry is a tough gig because you got to be, you know, expert, you got to worry about so many different things. You got to be compassionate. You got to say hard truths. But really my compassion for people that have gone through medical struggles has grown greatly through this. And I want people to know that it's okay, that this world is broken and it's okay to grieve that and to experience it in full. And I think God wants that. And if that's not true, I don't understand the Psalms then, because he's very open to our expressed grief and lamentations and all the things that, you know, and Jesus looking over Jerusalem and weeping, you know, feeling grief and experiencing it and expressing it. And I think our culture is wrong on this one. And I think the church could lead here better, because I think, you know, you don't always have to have, it doesn't mean you don't have your act together because you're going through something substantial, you know? So,
well, excuse me, what you've been writing at roboverholt.com, you know, I can come in second, I think has been such a gift to me and, you know, to those who love you, but also to anyone who's even struggling with a new world that we're facing with this pandemic. I mean, you're really teaching us how to grieve and how to lament in a healthy way and being honest about where we're at. I feel like, you know, what you've been writing has helped us, you know, grieve the loss of getting to have you in the office, you know, day after day. But you shared something in our creative team meeting the other day, and certainly some of what you've been writing. What are some of the things that, in addition to what you've already shared, the church can do at helping people face the loss that we're going through as a society right now?
Well, I think, you know, it's just being honest about it and grieving it well, and learning how to teach people how to lament, be it in song, be it in expression, and setting up times and spaces for that. You know, it's difficult to, you know, I think what we try to do so often is we try to, like, one size fits all a service, and it's very difficult, you know. And so, you know, our gathering and having spaces and places open for, like, you could come here, like, even now, like, to say, you could, you know, the way grocery stores are almost set up and you stay 6 feet apart, if there are almost stations of places to go through and, like, like journal, like, you can come in and you can journal your grief right here and take it with you, or you could come in and express it through this way. You could come in and do something. We want you should be doing that. You know, the way we function in our culture is just, it's just two forms of denial, but it's both denial. And it's one of the hard things that I've had to learn in my life is that I come from a long line of deniers. You know, my family is mostly, they're the bury your head in the sand camp. So I grew up detesting that, you know, bury your head in the sand. I really did. And I grew up saying, I'm never going to be like that. And so what I did is I just took the pendulum and I swung it all the way over to the other side of denial. But it's really still denial, which is just stick your head down and push forward. But you're still not actually absorbing and allowing for the expression of what's actually happening. They're both denying it. And since one's denying it through just getting stuck and burying your head, and the other's denying it through speed, you know, just pushing on and pretending like it's not real and that they can just will their way through it. Well, there's just some things in life that you know, humans, we are strong-willed, and we've been given the image of God. And so we can create and we can do these things, but life will bring into it, life will bring circumstances to your life where your will is not going to be strong enough to just push through. And some of the things that I've learned is, like, I was denying things in ways that I had not noticed. And so in being slowed down and in the grief, I just have learned so much about some of my own issues of denial and how I carry them. I'm guilty as well, just in a different way, and thought I was superior in some way. And it hurts like hell, but it's always good to be humbled in that way. And to acknowledge, like, oh, like, there's a learning here. And I just remember when I went into the grief, and I really appreciate it. There were many people that tried to encourage me, and I began to say to them, like, I appreciate your encouragement so much, but I'm not anxious to come out of this just yet, because it's teaching me so much, and I think I have more to learn. And to get to a place to not feel threatened by that is healthy, I think, you know. And at least my counselor affirms that. And so, and I think just the church being a place for that, being a house of mourning as well as a house of rejoicing. If COVID is teaching us anything, and if this is a sign of more things to come, then I just think we have to think through that. Like, how do we give space for people to come in and really mourn and grieve and lay it down at the foot of the cross? Literally, we use that expression a lot. But do we really make the allowance, other than maybe a 5-minute snippet in a service? You know, I'd love to see churches just open more for that. Just like, you can come here and express this, and we'll have grief counselors, or we'll have things stationed set up for you if we can't be in immediate contact. That'd be one great thing I think would come from this.
That's beautiful. Well, Rob, I'm so grateful for what I'm learning from you, and just what you're writing at roboverholt.com, Rob with two B's, for those who want to go take a peek. But thank you for just serving and leading in a whole new way that many of us have never even tried or even considered or denied even the need to. But I feel like what you're doing and what we're learning from you is vital, especially in this season. So thank you, Rob, for your friendship all these years and for continuing to teach me a lot. Grateful for you.
Well, thank you, Eric. And I want to say before I jump off, like you are, I've told you this before and I've told you this in the company of other people, but it's still true to this day. You are the greatest champion of people I've ever known in my life. And you've always been that, whether I was a struggling church planner when you were at Mosaic, when we were partners in ministry here in Austin, you know, trying to advance the kingdom, even in these days now, you are a model of what it looks like to champion people. And I love that in you, and I appreciate your friendship.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Thanks for joining us on the Post-Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.